The Democratic Party of Wisconsin has a new state party chair. Will she lead Democrats to victory in 2016? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, June 8th. We will get a recap of the State Democratic Party convention over the weekend from our state government reporter, Sean Johnson. Plus, Sean will bring us up to date on the latest involving the state budget. The latest on the proposed transportation budget, the Milwaukee Bucks arena deal, the UW faculty tenure controversy, and we will welcome your questions for Sean and your views on these issues at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at SJohnsonWPR. He joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And listeners will note that you have a cold because you've been working extra hard lately.
That's right. Yeah, there's something special about a summer cold, isn't there?
Yeah, and you were at the Democratic Party's convention on the weekend. How'd that go?
Yeah, on Saturday, the Democratic Party had a big decision, a contested race for state party chair. It's not something that happens every day. And this is one that was especially contested. You got the sense kind of behind the scenes that got pretty intense. Not so intense with the speeches on the stage at the last minute among the four candidates running for DPW chair, but they all made one last pitch to the delegates who were voting. Here's a little sample of what they told delegates.
We're going to ensure we get our voters out and identify our voter turnout problem. It's been talked about, but it's time to solve it. So Russ Feingold, Senator Tammy Baldwin, stay in office, and we send Governor Walker packing.
We don't have time for on-the-job training. We need someone now who can make our party move forward so that we can win in 2016 and 2018. We need a chair who's ready, and that chair is me.
Let's also start playing offense again. I want to be the Aaron Rodgers of the Democratic Party. I want to throw deep. I want to score touchdowns.
I am a leader who can take charge and bring our party together. I kept my stones to throw at Republicans.
So out of those four, Martha Lanning, Jason Ray, Joe Winicky, and Stephen Smith, it was Martha Lanning.
Martha Lanning. And Martha Lanning, it wasn't even close, really. She had 53% of the votes among the delegates who were there voting. 1,300 plus delegates there casting ballots for state party chair, which the party said was a high in at least the last 20 years. That was a number of people very interested in this race. When they started the voting, it took a couple hours, roughly 2 hours. Line was winding around the Potawatomi Convention Center all over the place. So a lot of interest in this race among party insiders.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not necessarily an insider, but certainly we talk about these issues enough that I was following some of this. And Joe Winicky was the former state Democratic Party chair and a frequent guest on this program, one of our Week in Review regulars. Why did he not have the inside track? What led to Martha Lanning's victory, do you think?
Martha Lanning is, I think she was sort of viewed as the change candidate in here. You know, things are obviously at the state level not going well for Democrats. They've had pretty good luck in high turnout national elections for president, for U.S. Senate. But at the state level, obviously Governor Walker's won 3 races in 4 years. The Assembly has its largest Republican majority in many decades. The Senate is Republican. So, you know, I think there are a lot of Democrats who are looking for a change. Jason Ray is a young Democrat, and so to like to refer to him as sort of the status quo is maybe a stretch, but he's, you know, definitely tight with the people who are running the party now, Mike Tate. And so it was in the end Martha Lanning that won the day. And, you know, among these delegates, they also liked Kathleen Vinehout, they thought in a straw poll, would be a pretty good governor. And so Kathleen Vinehout has been a very vocal advocate for Martha Lanning. There'd be some crossover there.
So who is Martha Lanning?
Martha Lanning is a Sheboygan businesswoman who's done a lot of private fundraising. She touted in this race, she touted her ability to raise $4 million for a Sheboygan community center. And she said that she wants to help Democrats turn the party around. She wants to win races and win them big.
Yeah, does she say how she's going to do that? I heard her in that clip saying we've got to address our low voter turnout in, you know, in non-presidential years. Does she have a plan?
You know, if you're looking for hard specifics, you didn't really hear them exactly in her speech or in her comments to reporters. But she did stress that she wanted to get back to the grassroots.
What's really key here is that we're seeing the house of cards that the Republicans have built falling. We're seeing a drop in Governor Walker's approval rating, and I think the citizens of Wisconsin are starting to see that these tax cuts that are in place are really making a difference on our communities. They're hurting our communities. Public education, our road structure, our infrastructure, and our businesses are not thriving like other states like Minnesota that have invested. So it's time that we send that message in a values-driven way, and we're going to turn things around.
So I guess she's got a presidential year as her first task in terms of voter turnout and fundraising and the like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty good year for her to come in, really, because where Democrats are right now, because they have so few seats in the legislature, they've got a decent shot of picking up some seats, and especially in a higher turnout presidential year. Again, Wisconsin has done well in these presidential elections, and Russ Feingold, at least according to early polling, is poised to do well in his race against Republican Senator Ron Johnson. So could be a good year for Democrats next year, but I think it's always early to say that in June, the year before an election.
Yeah. So Russ Feingold was one of the speakers at the convention?
Yeah, this is Feingold's kind of big return to the DPW convention. And one of the themes that you heard him kind of hit over and over again was he spoke in broad terms about returning respect to Wisconsin. He says that Republicans have made it a divisive state and that people have been made to feel ashamed of the work that they do. He says that needs to stop, and that's something that he wants to help stop if he's elected U.S. Senator.
The values of hard work and community, they are not gone. I know we all understand what's possible for Wisconsin's future. With opportunity and innovation and mutual respect pushing us to great things. This can happen, but only if we listen and only if we act. Wisconsin cannot afford any more politicians like Ron Johnson who run for office apparently only to serve people like themselves.
Yeah, Russ Feingold sounded like he might have a cold as well.
He sounded like that a little bit, yeah. And you heard him kind of going after Johnson's, going after his wealth a little bit there. I mean, at the same time that he's saying that we need to respect everybody and that when he grew up, the business community respected the members of the community and the members of the community respected the business community. It was kind of a mutual thing. He was going after Ron Johnson there a little bit and had some new lines of attack on the senator, too. I mean, some of it was stuff that you heard in their 2010 campaign, just as some of the attacks you're hearing from Ron Johnson are very reminiscent of what you heard a few years ago. But he's now kind of talking about Ron Johnson as like a Fox News type Republican, as somebody who's more focused on being a talking head on cable news than on worrying about Wisconsin and going after him on issues like student loans, and some statements that the senator has made between now and then that he wasn't running on in 2010.
Yeah, so I guess it was the weekend for the Democrats, but has the Republican Party weighed in at all on the results of the election or anything else?
I didn't reach out to them on what they think about Martha Lanning. I know they're not exactly worried, I guess, is at least the public front that they put out there. They've had pretty good success in the past several years and feel like they've successfully grown their grassroots. You know, the proof's in the pudding. We'll see where the parties are next year.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, during our state capitol report. If you have a question about the future of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin or what Democrats need to do to win statewide elections, especially in non-presidential years, we welcome your calls. Maybe you have a thought on the Feingold-Johnson race. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Or if you want to talk about state budget and other state politics, we'll take up the proposed Milwaukee Bucks arena deal as well, coming up in our next segment. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our state capitol report, when Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, often brings us up to date on the very latest in state politics and policy. We just talked about the Democratic Party of Wisconsin's convention over the weekend and the election of a new chair of the Democratic Party, Martha Lanning. We are going to talk about the latest with the state budget, but we have a caller who wants to talk Democratic Party politics first. Lou in Cudahy is with us. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I'm a conservative troll. In light of the third contraction in the so-called economic recovery, which is really an economic disaster, how will Wisconsin Democrats separate themselves from the Obama administration and his marginal record?
I think I like the introduction, by the way. That was cool. I think a lot will depend on where the economy is as we near Election Day, and how, if the economy is still growing, I don't think Democrats will have as big of a problem associating themselves with President Obama. And I think it's going to favor Hillary Clinton, presuming that she's the nominee. I mean, if the economy's in good shape next year, it bodes well for Democrats. If not, if it starts to tank, mm-hmm. I think that it's a big opening for whoever the Republican candidate is. I mean, just looking at hard numbers here, like the last time Marquette polled on President Obama's approval rating, it was 49% approve, 47% disapprove. Those aren't great numbers, but they're not bad. So I don't think he's going to bring everybody down at this point, just based on those numbers and where things are right now.
All right. Thank you very much, Lou. James on Facebook posts, "The Bucks Arena is going to be a hard sell to the members of the Republican Party, especially from up north." So that leads us to the latest on this Milwaukee Bucks Arena deal. We had Governor Walker last week standing up at a podium announcing the new deal. What is the new deal, Sean?
Well, first, let's describe what he was standing behind there. And it was a sign that it didn't say, like, you know, "Bucks for the new generation" or anything like that. It was, the sign said, "It's cheaper to keep them," which was his basic message about the Milwaukee Bucks. And that is, You don't have to like this deal. You don't have to love the Bucks, but he wants to make the pitch that from a financial standpoint, it's better to the state if they keep the Bucks than if they lose them. Here's the governor.
"The price of doing nothing is not zero. It's $419 million. The state's commitment is capped at $80 million. The overall public commitment is capped at $250 million. That means if costs exceed the $500 million that are estimated for this project, the public's commitment is capped at that $250 million. The rest would have to be picked up by the Bucks and their partners in the private sector. I think that's incredibly important."
So, $500,000, or I'm sorry.
So what are the numbers that he's throwing around here? He's saying that a few things. He's saying that if the Bucks were to leave, it would cost Wisconsin $419 million, yeah, over 20 years. And he's contrasting that with what the state would have to commit in this deal, which is $80 million capped after interest on some bonds. So, you know, the Milwaukee County's role and the city of Milwaukee's role both grew in this latest partnership, and the state's role in this kind of shrunk. I mean, it didn't kind of shrink, it did. I mean, $80 million in bonding with including interest is a far cry from the $220 million in bonding without interest that was proposed by the governor initially for this Bucks deal. So that is his pitch. Now, where's that $419 million figure come from, right? Because some people are saying that, wait, that is coming out of thin air, I believe one of your guests said last week in the Week in Review. He's basing that on a few things. And these are numbers that are coming from the Walker administration. So it's not like these are coming from the Fiscal Bureau or an independent analysis. These are coming from the Walker administration's Department of Revenue. They're based on what the Bucks bring in income tax revenue now, which the Walker administration says would be about $130 million over 20 years. And then they say that because of this new NBA media contract that's coming up, it's just going to become a much more lucrative business, the NBA. And so having an NBA team is going to be good for any city that has it, and they expect tax growth of $169 million over 20 years. Again, this is just from the Walker administration's Department of Revenue. It's not exactly independently verified. And then the rest of that money comes from costs that would be the state would assume with the existing Bradley Center to pay off old bonds and to repair the Bradley Center.
But in essence, when it comes down to it's $250 million or half of the cost of a $500 million Bucks Arena would come from taxpayers.
Yeah, and that's a little tricky, though, because, I mean, the governor's framing this in different ways. He's saying $80 million is the state's commitment, and that's capped. But that $80 million includes the interest. $250 million, which is the public's share, right, city, county, and state, the public's share of this Bucks deal, does not include interest. And the interest payments would drive that figure up, according to reporting by the Journal Sentinel, to more around $400 million. So, you know, this is why it would be nice to see all this laid out with somebody other than the stakeholders kind of doing the analysis here. I mean, the people who reached the deal are saying, here's what it says, but we don't have a bill yet. We don't have any kind of a Fiscal Bureau analysis or anything like that to say, what are the numbers?
Yeah. So the governor says it's cheaper to keep them. What are other people saying?
Yeah, the governor's basically, you know, you don't have to love this, but here's the deal. Chris Abele, Milwaukee County executive, had a much different pitch. He says basically this is the best thing to happen to downtown Milwaukee ever.
The potential upside is larger than we have had for downtown in terms of economic development ever. And yes, people should worry about being clear and enforcing and ensuring and continuing to work that we get every dime of return we can out of this investment. But they should also be thinking, what's the message to the rest of the country that we'll be saying when we say if we can't make $250 million in private money, an extraordinary opportunity put forward by people who have enormous amounts of successful experience in development, if we can't get this right, what's the message we're saying to developers outside the state when we want to keep this state a hotbed for business and that we're easy to work with? We should be worried about that, too.
So the Bucks are good for business, he says.
Yeah, and he's saying, what do we say to investors elsewhere if we don't take this deal, which maybe isn't the message that some Democrats would want to be sending. I mean, I think Abele's role in this is pretty significant in that he's the one that was able to bring the state's share of this deal down. I mean, and this doesn't happen if the state doesn't sign off on it. The legislature and the governor don't sign off on it. And the legislature, including those northern Wisconsin lawmakers, is going to have a hard time doing that, potentially. Abele brought another, you know, $80 million to the table for this deal by raising taxes in Milwaukee County or finding some other source of revenue like that. What he's bringing to this deal is saying, look, we have all this unpaid debt to the county that we can't collect. We're going to turn that over to the state of Wisconsin, and the state of Wisconsin is going to collect that debt, and that is going to be our share of this arena. That's going to pay off our share of the bonds. They're very confident that they can do this. They say the state is more specialized, centralized when it comes to collecting debt, and they'll be able to get this money that we were not able to get. But, you know, the fact remains, Milwaukee County has not been able to get this money. The comptroller questions whether the state will be able to get it either, the county comptroller. And then, you know, just fundamentally, you look at this debt and who owes it. It's largely owed by poor people. I mean, these are court costs, unpaid property taxes. And so you're going to be financing this stadium, which is going to benefit billionaires. You know, it's going to benefit billionaires. They're going to profit from the you know, what happens in this arena. And you're going to be financing it in part by uncollected debt owed by poor people in Milwaukee County. And so that's a very tricky part of the deal.
Yeah, Democratic State Senator Lena Taylor was on this show recently expressing her hope that the Milwaukee Bucks could stay in Milwaukee, and talked about the benefits of the Bucks being in Milwaukee, but she was concerned about that specific aspect of the deal. But overall, supportive of doing something to keep the Bucks. How does this play on along party lines, Sean? And how is it going to play? What about our Facebook commenter who says this is going to be a hard sell?
It's exactly right. This is one of those rare issues where people aren't, to use a sports term, not everybody's on the same team. I mean, typically when a bill comes up in the legislature, you can basically tell which bills are going to be party line votes, and a lot of them are. All the Republicans will stick together on this. All the Democrats will stick together on this. It's pretty predictable. And this is one of those rare issues where you're going to have some Republicans who like it. I mean, the business community is for this, and Republicans have been pretty strong allies of, for example, MMAC in Milwaukee. So there are going to be Republicans who say, yeah, we support this. There are going to be Republicans who say, no, we're not going to subsidize billionaire owners and millionaire players. On the Democratic side, there are going to be some Milwaukee Democrats who say, this is good for my city, and it would be horrible for my city if this team left. Yeah, I'm going to support this. And there are going to be other Democrats who say, whoa, we're going to collect money from poor people to subsidize these billionaires. And beyond that, if I'm in Milwaukee and I'm concerned with internal Milwaukee politics, the county executive is going to do all this without input from the county board. So you run into a lot of thorny issues here, and I don't think we really know what's going to happen.
Greg on Facebook says $250 million in cuts to the UW system. $250 million in state tax dollars for a private for-profit business, the Bucks. Zero for state parks. That must be self-sustaining, unlike the Bucks, apparently. And borrowing money for state roads? Why didn't the roads need to be self-sustaining as well? It brings us into a lot of different territory here, but there is, what a quandary, huh?
It is. I mean, and the number, I mean, the way that you get that $250 million cut for the UW and the way you get the $250 million commitment for the Bucks is very different. I mean, the $250 million commitment for the Bucks is state, city, and county. It's public money, and it's over 20 years is the cap. And the $250 million cut to the UW is GPR, that's state taxpayer money, this year. So it's not exactly apples to apples, but fact remains, those numbers are the same right now. And if you go out into districts across the state, I think people will make that connection, you know? And yeah, this budget does not include any state tax money for the state park system. That's something where the administration decided we want to be self-sufficient. The borrowing is, that's another topic that I think we'll get to here.
Wait, but why don't we take care of that
Sure.
right now? I saw a headline that said that Governor Walker might go along with the proposal to have no borrowing at all for the state transportation projects.
Yeah, and so let's kind of step back, and how did we get to here? The governor's budget proposed $1.3 billion in new borrowing for roads. He rejected all these ideas for new sources of revenue from his own Department of Transportation, gas taxes, fees, things like that. And when Republican lawmakers said, hey, we'd be willing to support an increase to the vehicle registration fee, probably hinting pretty strongly, like, yeah, we might have the votes for that and we might do it. The governor said, no, I'll veto that. Maybe didn't use the word veto, but basically said everything but I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. So there are Republican lawmakers who have said, we don't like that much bonding. Kind of in a jam there, right? If you can't raise revenue to deal with it, you got to cut projects. So Robin Voss kind of threw out this trial balloon the other day, speaking to reporters, says, you know, maybe we just won't do any bonding.
You know, I mean, one of the things that we've talked about is maybe there should be no new bonding. You know, maybe that's one option. I mean, if we're not going to create any new revenues, maybe we don't have any new bonding. So there's a lot of options in the middle.
So what does that mean? No bonding. Does that mean no road building?
I think you'd have $1.3 billion worth of road projects that were either cut or delayed, which is a big deal, especially given the clout of the road building lobby in Wisconsin over the years and just the willingness, the eagerness by lawmakers to support road building, to vote for road building. I mean, both parties have over the years supported this. So for anyone to talk about, maybe we're not going to do this, we're not going to bond, it's a pretty big deal. And then the governor says,
I'll sign that.
Yeah, I would reluctantly sign it, his spokeswoman said. So
does that mean that's what's going to be the result of the transportation budget?
I still think that's unlikely. I still think that's unlikely given recent, well, not recent, like a lengthy history of not doing that in Wisconsin.
What is the big problem that Speaker Voss has with bonding or borrowing money? Doesn't that happen all the time?
It does, but it's getting to a point in the transportation budget where the debt is really piling up. And if the governor's budget were to go through with all $1.3 billion worth of bonding for roads, you would be looking at 23 cents of every dollar in the transportation budget would be going toward debt service. So you're paying off old credit card debt, essentially, with 23 cents of every dollar instead of using that money to build or repair roads. So it is at a pretty serious level in the budget, and basically the reason for that is there has not been a willingness to embrace new revenues, but there's been a bipartisan, enthusiastic willingness to build new roads. And so we haven't stopped building in Wisconsin, but we haven't, it's not getting any easier to pay for roads. And so what we have done and what Governor Walker's done in his budgets specifically is he has bonded more. He's increased bonding.
Yeah, so we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who wanted to ask, what is the status of the $25 bike tax? We talked about it being Wisconsin Bike Week this week. That particular idea was a trial balloon. It's not in the budget. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess any of this could still feasibly be alive, but I feel like I'd heard that was not going to happen. To sell that, I think they would have to be confident that it was... I mean, what they were proposing was a tax. It was a sales tax on new bikes, which is a tax. And I think they were trying to pitch it as a user fee, which is maybe a bit of a stretch.
Because it wouldn't necessarily be used on bike pass. It would be used for anything.
It's sales tax. It's sales mm-hmm. tax on bikes. It'd go to the general fund. It's a sales tax. So how do you get people to support a tax? You find a way to call it a fee, but I'm not sure they're going to do that.
Well, we have another newscast coming up. We'll get the latest from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with WPR's Sean Johnson about some other state budget news. We'll talk about the controversy over tenure at the UW, and we'll talk about a dispute in the prevailing wage issue, too. The This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about the latest in state politics and state policy and things being debated at the state capitol. We have talked some about the latest with the Milwaukee Bucks arena deal. We've talked some about the transportation budget, and we will we'll talk more about other issues still to be dealt with when it comes to the next budget for Wisconsin. And we'll welcome your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Coming up in just a bit, we'll also talk about the latest when it comes to the tenure controversy. And I know that we have callers who have other questions, Sean, but I wanted to ask you, I thought it was the hope of joint finance, the hope of Republican leaders in the state legislature and Governor Walker, for that matter, that that this this budget talk would be wrapping up about now.
I thought we would be done, especially with the joint finance piece of this a few weeks ago.
But it doesn't. They're not going to even take up these big areas this week, as far as the calendar says.
You know, they may not meet this week again, and so you've got a few things that are holding things up. The Bucks deal, they don't know what to do there. They don't know whether to keep it in the budget, take it out of the budget. They don't know if they have the votes. So that's one of them. Transportation is another one. When you've got the governor and the speaker of the assembly floating big, absolutes like they've been doing, that's going to hold up a big piece of the budget. And then the other thing that they're dealing with right now is prevailing wage.
Yeah. So I know that some Republicans wanted to repeal it. Others said, no, let's just reform it. What's the holdup now?
This is something that conservative media and conservative groups have really taken on as their cause. And they're saying you've got to repeal it, that this is an archaic law. This is something that, we've got these huge majorities in the state legislature. If not now, when? And so they really want it done in the budget. And you heard last week, Senator Dewey Strobel, Republican who filled the state Senate seat vacated by now Congressman Glenn Grothman, Dewey Strobel said he's not going to vote for the budget unless it repeals prevailing wage for local projects. So local government projects. And prevailing wage is basically the minimum wage that gets paid on these projects based on a survey when it comes to government construction projects. Something that's been around in Wisconsin for a long time.
And if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, newly elected Republican State Senator Howard Markline did not want to change prevailing wage.
And he's been pretty firm on that. He's not going to vote for a repeal of prevailing wage. Howard Markline, representing more of a swing district, he's in the old Dale Schultz district in southwest Wisconsin. And Howard Markline says, I'm not going to vote for that. And so you can only lose three Republicans, have a 19-14 majority in the Senate. And what that means is if three Republicans kind of dig in their heels and say, well, I'm not going to vote for the budget, they got problems. I mean, Senator Fitzgerald is going to have some problems getting the votes together for that. And you've got Strobel saying, I'm not going to vote for it without prevailing wage. You've got Senator Steve Noss saying, I'm probably not going to vote for the budget because of everything that it does with the University of Wisconsin, and he's not a fan of the Bucks deal. I don't know how they're going to cobble together the votes for it in the Senate. You know, watch for a bunch of stuff potentially to get added to the budget at the last minute to win votes. We'll call it win votes.
Does that mean like little pork projects that
could be pork? It could be a pet bill that a legislator wanted and can't get passed in the committee process or hadn't been able to get a hearing for. A lot of stuff like that, just something that these legislators want if they're going to take a vote for a budget they don't particularly care for, and their vote is important. That's the type of stuff that gets added to the budget at the last minute.
We have to get to the UW situation and tenure. Let me quickly, though, take some callers who have other questions. Mike in Slinger. Hello, Mike.
Yes, good morning. I heard a blip yesterday. yesterday afternoon on the news about the DNR and the firings, or the letting go, however you want to put it, of the science, some of the scientists at DNR. And they indicated that some of the scientists are being let go were not favorable towards the mine up in northern Wisconsin. And they told the governor so-and-so, that, you know, also some of the phosphorus going into the lake and the not changing of the laws, they were opposed to that. And some, apparently the indication was that these are the people that are being let go.
Do we know that to be a fact, Sean?
We don't know names or anything. But you look at the DNR and the DNR scientists and the way that they handled the mine situation, that never got to the point where the state either granted or denied that permit in northern Wisconsin. But they were giving that project definitely a vigorous review, and they kept telling the mining company, we need more information on this, you know, your mitigation plans, what are you going to do with this? They weren't bending over backward to help this mine get built. And so there's the thought among some Democrats that this is kind of retribution for that. But, you know, it's not like we don't exactly have like cold, hard proof of that.
Let's get to this big controversy over tenure. Lawmakers removed it from state statutes and said, here, UW Board of Regents, you control this now. So what happened?
Yeah, so the UW Board of Regents met last week in Milwaukee, and they talked about this. They talked about the issue of tenure. And remember, because they serve seven-year terms in the Board of Regents, and also one of the regents is Tony Evers, the state superintendent of public instruction, you still have some Governor Jim Doyle appointees on the board. So Democratic appointees to the board, mixed in with now a majority of Governor Scott Walker appointees on the board. Jose Vasquez, a regent, one of the Doyle appointees, said when they met in Milwaukee, he didn't really buy the argument that giving the university the ability to deal with tenure and make these changes to tenure is going to somehow empower the university.
I have heard things like somehow tenure impedes the regents from doing their job. I've never have experienced any instance where I have had to say as a regent, I can't carry out my duties because the faculty blah, 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 blah. I've never been in that situation.
So they wanted the Doyle appointees on the board, along with Tony Evers, wanted to approve a resolution urging the legislature to remove the tenure changes, to keep tenure as part of state law. That failed. What the board ended up doing is they did vote, the full board ultimately did vote to make tenure a part of the board's policy, of university policy. One of the Walker-appointed regents, Drew Peterson, said that, that was a significant step.
Tenure is an important aspect of a faculty's day-to-day operations, so their right to express their views. I think we were very deliberate in having them have a seat at the table to make sure that we heard decisively what that was on their mind, and I think we've committed to protect tenure in a modernized fashion going forward.
Yeah, aren't faculty and others concerned, though, that it's not just tenure, but but it's whether they can be fired for non-fiscal emergency reasons?
Exactly.
Like,
there's a big asterisk to this in that the legislature's budget committee added this provision that will make it easier for the Board of Regents to fire people. Much easier compared to now, in the case of a financial emergency, or really, really kind of vague language that would give the board more power to fire people. And some faculty say what that's going to mean is that we're going to have certain degree programs, possibly controversial ones, that'll have to live in fear of getting chopped at any moment.
So also, we have a new member of the UW Board of Regents.
We will soon, yeah. I mean, this is Michael M. Grebe is the latest Walker appointee to the board. That name sounds familiar. His dad is Michael W. Grebe. Michael W. Grebe was the chair of Scott Walker's gubernatorial campaigns. He's also the president and CEO of the Bradley Foundation, which is a very powerful conservative group in Wisconsin. Basically funds the conservative infrastructure in Wisconsin. So, you know, Michael Grebe, a very significant name in Republican politics here. So the younger Grebe was had his confirmation hearing last week, and one of the ideas that he floated was potentially eliminating duplicative degree programs where, you know, he said if the UW has the same program at multiple campuses, maybe that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I would question why we need to do that, why we need to duplicate those programs, spend resources on similar programs in each location if we can find a way to do it more effectively, spread around the state in a rational way, but in a way that doesn't unnecessarily expend resources. That's one of the sort of ideas that I'm talking about in terms of how to think about how we operate the UW system. And again, it gets to, if you work for a company that has multiple manufacturing locations, you might not do the same thing at every one of those locations because your customer base may be different. You may specialize in one area or another on certain products.
So, I mean, what he's talking about there is kind of what some faculty are worried about. If suddenly the university has this broad power to, you know, fire people, potentially end programs, and I'm on a campus that has a program that's available at Madison or Whitewater, what's going to happen to me? And so that vote, the final vote on Michael Grebe's confirmation to the Board of Regents is scheduled for tomorrow in the State Senate.
Oh, okay. So we have just a minute to go. What is the next step for this this whole tenure issue? Is it it's up to the lawmakers to all vote on it now?
Still has to pass the full budget, mm-hmm. but I think clearing the Finance Committee was a pretty significant hurdle. And you haven't heard UW administrators say, we got to take this out. I think Ray Cross, the system president, was saying, you know, I don't think it's as bad as people are portraying it. So they're not giving a strong sign, either Ray Cross or UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank, that they want to push to take this out. It still has to pass the full legislature, though.
And we'll leave it there for now. Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Caleb Lato for producing and directing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.